This podcast was recorded at the 2009 QP National Convention.
Now I said, and in all seriousness, it is an order of the day right now, Monday afternoon. Constitution says of our great union that in the morning, the National President must report to convention on the last 2 years, and in the afternoon, the National Secretary Treasurer must do the same. And I've had the great privilege for almost 20 years to work in a variety of capacities with Brother Claude Généroux. The last 6 years, full-time, I said to Claude's mom at lunchtime, I think I see Claude more than my own family, and I'm not sure about that. But I want to tell you that our union has a steady hand at the tiller when it comes to the management of your hard-earned dues dollars, your per capita, and a diligent trade unionist supporting the campaigns and the struggles of QP members and QP locals from coast to coast. And it's my privilege to call forward for his time to account to you, the membership, my good friend, my brother, Claude Généroux.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Merci beaucoup. Merci. Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much. I see my brothers and sisters from Canjet. And let me tell you, that was quite an emotional roller coaster. We heard Kyra singing and reciting her songs, her poetry, and our brothers and sisters on local Canjet 918, and now Fred, who lost his credentials, and he's got them back. That's us. That's a convention. Brothers and sisters, in solidarity. Paul forgot something. Usually, he asks everyone in the room, who is here for the first time at a convention? Who is on his first? Will you stand up, please? Raise your arm. Photographers. Okay, everybody. Wow. Stand up, stand up. We'll see you better. Stand up, stand up. First time at a QP biennial convention. Stand up. Holy mackerel. Wow. This is the renewal of QP, the continuation of QP. I hope you're as happy as me to be here today. And good afternoon. Good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Welcome to Montreal. Luke, Lucy, and the others have welcomed you here. And of course, you know I'm biased about Montreal. I'm a Montrealer. Michelle and Lucy talked about Montreal, but I'm really happy to be here. And to be back, look at all these members. Holy crow, from everywhere in Canada. This is the largest convention in the history of QP. And sometimes we get a little tired and stuff, you know. But we have more than 2,500 people together here. It's extraordinary. It's amazing. And it's going to work. We're going to move. We're going to decide what we're going to do in the future. Is it Montreal that does this? Well, I know it's a nice city, beautiful city, but that's only part of it. You know, I think there's other reasons why you're here. It goes beyond Montreal being a nice city. I think you're here because this year there is so much for us to do. Hey, after all, we are union activists, right? So, in the face of this global recession, we're here today, ready to roll up our sleeves and get to work, renewing our commitment to one another and to collectively determine our future. We're going to talk a lot about the economy this week. Look, it's really what's on top of everybody's mind, and we have good reasons to think about it. The economy affects all of us in one way or another. And strangely this year, because while the economists are predicting a recovery in the coming months, that's not going to make much of a difference for working people. Because the economists who are predicting this recovery, they're talking only about the stock markets. That's all they talk about, stock markets. That's all they talk about, you know. This meltdown in August 2008 was only about financial markets, according to these guys. Up until then, the markets were fine. Everything was ziggity-boo. But that's not the whole story, is it? No. It's not just the Toronto Stock Exchange. Let's go back a little bit before this meltdown in August 2008 to May 2008. Just a few months before this current economic crisis exploded. Stats Canada back in May reported that for the 25 years between 1980 and 2005, incomes of the wealthiest Canadians had increased by over 16%. And they also reported, that's Stats Canada, that incomes for those in the middle class, the middle, stayed exactly the same over 25 years. 25 years, I think it was 20, whatever it was exactly the same money in 25 years, a whole generation. That means that for the poorest Canadians, incomes dropped by over 20%, dropped. So while Canada experienced 25 years of economic growth, all that growth really meant was that the gap between the rich and the poor got bigger and bigger and bigger. Then came the financial crisis. We're coming back to August 2008. This crisis exploded. And this crisis was caused by the wealthy who were playing in the financial markets. In other words, the crisis was caused by greed. For the poorest among us, the recession simply made things that much worse. For working people, it means job losses, growing uncertainty, and especially for retirement incomes. I think we mentioned it already this morning, and we're going to bring it up again. There are no real gains, and we have a lot of work when we're trying to make improvements and the employer is always fighting against us. You know, we have problems with PPP, privatization, all these things will cut back on us. But, brothers and sisters, we're CUPE, Canadian Union of Public Employees, and that means we'll stand up for what is ours. We'll fight for what they deserve. And we're going to continue to fight because we certainly deserve more and better. We want something just, equitable, and decent. Over the past year, many CUPE members were forced to strike votes. Paul mentioned them this morning. Many had job action to force the employer to bargain fairly. Like Local 301, for example, here in Montreal. After 2 years, 2 years of negotiations, the sisters and brothers are fighting for public services here in Montreal. It's not just their working conditions. It's not abstract. We're talking about public services. And that's not all. They're also in Montreal fighting against corruption and bribery and for their jobs. We don't like to hear these words, corruption and bribery, because, you know, there's always some kind of a legal, they come back to us legally if we use words like this. So we have to support them. We have to support them, not only with our money, but with our feet. So, in order to support them with our feet, we will join them on their picket line Wednesday for their second day of one-day rotating strikes. So Wednesday, bring out your raincoats, bring out your umbrellas. No money this time. You don't have to send them any money very far. They're right across the street. We're going to go three blocks away from here, and we're going to walk the picket line with these people. Okay, we'll come back to this later on. How about British Columbia, Local 873? 3,500 paramedics across the entire province, in spite of being denied the right to strike, they have picket lines up, and it's been that way since April 1st. They've been staging public events and rallies across the province to draw attention to this crisis in paramedic service. And it's a real crisis. It's everybody suffers from a crisis like this in B.C. This crisis caused by what in B.C.? Underfinancing, low wages, lousy working conditions. So people quit those jobs. They don't want to be paramedics. We always refuse concessions at the bargaining table. Since last January 2009... more than 30,000 CUPE members made the ultimate sacrifice by refusing to offer their services and to live on the strike pay from our strike fund. They want to defend public services and want to defend me and you and all of us. And I'd like to thank all of these members for standing up for this. In York University, we have Local 3903. Are you here? You're local. York University, are you here? Stand up. Local. 3908. 3372 from Aramac, Canada. 3372. 2254, Grand Forks Library, BC. 2096, Brandon Medical Clinic in Manitoba. Brandon. 82. 543 in the city of Windsor. We heard that about them this morning. Local 1000, the power workers in Ingersoll, Ontario. Locals 416 to 79, City of Toronto, hey. 1521, Lanark Association for Community Living. And now, excuse me if I don't pronounce those English words right. And now, as of last week, life continues, life goes on. Local 719, Woodstock, New Brunswick. So they've been locked out. So thank you. Thank you to every one of you for your determination, for your sacrifice, because you're fighting for what is right on behalf of all working people, right and justice. You see, we're facing one of the toughest bargaining climates that we've ever seen in many, many, many years. And it's the same thing from one end of the country to the other. New Brunswick Premier Graham has a new way of negotiating, a new bargaining. He just says, here's my fiscal policy. That's it. He just declared it. Dictation. Dictatorship. No more negotiations. No more raises. Zero and zero for 2 years. In BC, it's even worse. 4 years of zeros. Zero, 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 zero. 4 years of zeros. I don't know if Graham influenced Peter Campbell or whether it's the Olympic Games, you know, because the Olympic Games have five rings, five zeros. BC's got four zeros. And in BC, I'm glad to see they appreciate these Olympic references and debts. That's nothing less than trying to suspend our fundamental right to bargaining. And this kind of assault against our brothers and sisters will continue, even though the stock markets have begun to rise again. Well, they go up, they go down, they go up, they go down. And this will certainly help the very wealthy to get back to larger incomes. But will this really fix the cracks in public pensions? I'm wondering. Will it reduce the gap between rich and poor that we've seen over the past 25 years? Will it ensure that public services are secure? I think not. I don't think so. And rising stock prices will not ensure any of that. It won't, unless we get to work. And when I say we, I mean we. I mean CUPE. CUPE doing what we do best. And that's us, members and staff, working collectively. Why? To increase wages, to achieve pension security, to build public services, to fight privatization, to work for real equality, and to work for environmental sustainability. Now you're going to have to take your headphones off, and I'm going to change into language of French.
This is not a report. With what I've just said, this is not a report about doom and gloom. It is a tough road ahead, that's to be sure. But I want to focus my report to you today on activism, on our activism, because the really good news is that we're strong in all three funds, because that's what we have in CUPE, three funds. We have secured the resources we need for the tough road ahead of us. And I'm going to start my presentation to you today by telling all of you activists one important thing. In a trade union convention, I will tell you this, money talks. And that's right, money talks. And I guess you did not need to hear this from me. You've heard this before. And I haven't forgotten that this is accountability day, as Paul was reminding all of us, because of our constitution. It is a day when I must report to you on our financial operations over the past 2 years. And as I have a bit of a reputation, just a wee bit of a reputation for taking some time to present my reports to you, and I'm wondering why some are laughing, now I know the new delegates that don't know me. It laughs more. Well, you could say money talks a lot then. And seriously though, for me, it is important to provide as much information and transparency on our financial operations to you as I possibly can. And the reports and the audited statements that I provide along with my report are really much more than numbers on a page, or many pages for that matter, when you look at the last 2 years' report. And this report is a real picture of our solidarity, of our union strength, of our values, and it is a glimpse into our future. It tells a story. So like I said, money talks. And it tells the world how strong we are. And how strong are we? Well, for 2008, CUPE's total revenues, adding all three funds and all the financial statements, are in that book again, the General Fund, the National Defense Fund. And did I say the Defense Fund? Yep, I think. The Strike Fund is the third one. Together accounted for over $166 million. In 2007, that's a lot of spending power in some ways. In 2007, total revenues added up to over $158 million. So I won't try to bore you too much in the afternoon with many numbers, but I need to be accountable, so I'll try to balance with the salient numbers. So it shows that close to $8 million in growth from 2007 into 2008. And the growth in our resource base speaks to, this too tells a story. It tells the world how effective we are because our finances have grown a lot. For example, since 2001, we've increased our revenue by 30%. That's the largest factor of this to create the increased revenue, actually, is there's no magic science to this. It's wage gains. We're effective at the bargaining table. You are effective at the bargaining table with the support, with the help, the involvement of our QP staff as well. And today, we stand strong at 600,000 members, as Paul reminded all of us today. That's quite a new threshold in Canada and in labor. So we have come a long way since our founding convention in 1963, when there were just around 70,000 QP members then. And since the 70s, we've added roughly 100,000 members per decade. By 1980, we reach a quarter million members. Sorry. And after 1980, by 1990, we reach 400,000. By change, turn of millennium, by year 2000, we reach 500,000 members. And now, this year, in 2009, 600,000. Steady growth. And that, too, you can see the numbers in the chart in my written report in the book that is called The Last 2 Years. So, yeah, we're building ourselves as members with the membership. But how we spend the money is ultimately the loudest in telling our story. Our spending tells the world who we are and what we are all about. QP has always been a social union, meaning that we take our work for progressive social change as seriously as we take our work at the bargaining table. In fact, they're one and the same. With the growth in membership, we have had to focus our resources for almost ever in a day, focus on our resources, on building our servicing capacity to you, and the administrative and operating dollars it takes to keep this up so that we have that standard to service you. Well, up until very recently, we have not had the capacity to fund members' activism in any real significant way. Well, we were doing it, but quite marginally. For example, in 1963, the only full-time activists in QP were the staff. There were no full-time local presidents. That has been changing gradually over our 46 years of existence. Today, we're much different. We are bigger, we're more complex, and we need and we want to keep up this activism that is needed, that works. So, I'm proud to review with you the changes we have made in our operations over the past 2 years to address, in a meaningful way, that other dimension of QP, member activism. Traditionally, we have paid for our activism in one fund, our campaigns, our political action, through the National Defense Fund. That's what we've done up until very recently. However, past 2 years, we've made some structural changes to recognize much of this work as an ongoing, everyday work, as core work, not as being something exceptional on top of. So it is not special. It's not crisis-driven. It's our core work. So we have moved some significant portions of the activist funding to the general fund, our operating fund. Like political action, I'll give you a couple of examples. This one being very clear these days for all of us. We know that being active in politics at election time and in between is completely crucial to achieving better public policy, whether that be in labor legislation, provision of public services, economic justice, human rights, equality, and so on and on and on. Over the past 2 years, we have, this way, budgeted $1,150,000 for election spending in our general fund. That's in some ways a lot of money, and in others, not a whole lot. Similarly, we've budgeted $2.5 million per year in our general fund again for anti-privatization campaigns. At the last national convention, I had announced something, but the whole convention was completely enthused by this, and we were mandated to put $5 million over 2 years to fight privatization and contracting out in all its faces, many faces. So we put this money into the general fund, recognizing that fighting privatization is always going to be with us. We fight it in every province. You heard Lucie Levasseur, opening up convention. We fight it every year, whether it is stopping public-private partnership or fighting contracting out. This will always be a core operation of QP. So we are accounting for it in our day-to-day operations in the general fund, just like we do for our staffing and our property costs. We have also increased, a second example of this, the amount that goes to our provincial divisions for their operations. We began providing to our provincial divisions in the 90s as a measure to ensure our political arm in the regions had the necessary resources for their essential work, a bit of money. In 1998, the total amount for all 10 divisions was $150,000 that we'd provide from national to 10 divisions. So you can do the math. And over the last 10 years, we have increased this significantly. The largest increases in the last 2 years, as a matter of fact. So in 2007, provincial divisions received close to $700,000, and in 2008, close to $800,000. Today, in 2009, the total budget for this expense is $942,000, and I think it's simpler to say $1 million. That's more than six times the allocation of 1998. Then, only two of the 10 provincial divisions had full-time booked-off presidents. Now, as I'm speaking to you today, there are nine divisions that have full-time officer. I believe this increase in funding is crucial because it means increased effectiveness for our political action, for our representation of all of you, very more specifically underground in all provinces. So in 2008, we accumulated a surplus of $4,740,000. Given the challenges we could see ahead as a result of the increasing attacks on bargaining rights and collective agreements, we used this as an opportunity that was quite unique because we had not planned for this. So the National Executive Board voted to create a special fight-back fund of $2.5 million. This fight-back fund is to be used when QP members face threats to their fundamental bargaining rights through government action and legislation of all kinds, just like what is happening right now in New Brunswick, and we've talked about this. And I want to be clear, this is not about tough bargaining, because almost all of the time, bargaining is tough. We have other funds for tough bargaining. This is about getting us to the bargaining tables when public employers try to deny us this fundamental right to be at a bargaining table and bargain in good faith and get in the end, a good contract. So we did not have any specific funding before this. Now we have $2.5 million in the general fund permanently. So these changes, these three, four changes I've outlined with you, well, they have also served to strengthen the defense fund, because this was used from the defense fund before. So because the demands for resources from the National Defense Fund, they keep on growing, so we can attend to the new demands, the new requests as they surge. Why don't we switch again gears and ears? En 2007, je vais vous parler de la deuxième caisse. Je vous ai parlé
to you now. I talked about the National Defense Fund, now I'll talk about the Defense Fund. So in 2007, its revenue was $6.905 million, and in 2008, it was $7.265 million. So for these both years, spending went over budget by slightly over $25,000 in 2007 and by close to $117,000 in 2008, a slight deficit. Now, there are only four expenditure categories in the entire National Defense Fund: cost-share programs, major organizing initiatives, national strategic priorities, and fourth, regional strategic priorities. This is kind of an internal jargon. If you're new here, this is the way we call these little babies, if you will. So these four categories account for a wide variety of political work: organizing initiatives, member activism, community international support. For example, 179 QP chartered organizations put their resources toward many successful campaigns funded through our cost share program over the past 2 years. Now, each dollar spent by a QP chartered organization is matched by our cost share program. So in 2007, the cost share budget was set at 1.7 mil, and really 1.95 million was spent on these campaigns throughout the year, almost 2 million. In 2008, the cost share budget was increased to 2 million, and 2.4 million was spent on campaigns. So we went over. And needless to say, we believe this money was well spent, very well spent. Now, thanks to our cost share program, we successfully fought contracting out in municipalities. We stopped development of P3 hospitals and P3 schools. We saved the child care center from closing. These are just a few real examples. And we even launched many successful public campaigns to support bargaining. Bargaining by all of our brothers and sisters in various sectors in all the provinces. So for 2009, we increased the amount budgeted for cost shares to $2.3 million. I'm trying to put a little order into this. Now we'll come up to the strike fund. Now, the money, the strategic priority funding is regional money that goes directly to the larger provincial divisions, and it provides 100% funding for their priority initiatives. They decide the priorities. For example, in BC, this money supports their Strong Communities campaign and HEU's fight against contracting out. And it's working. They're both working. In Ontario, this funding has been used to undertake all kinds of campaigns, such as the P3 mobile exhibit, the campaign against healthcare privatization, and equality and health and safety campaigns, and once again, were successful. And here in Quebec, the money fought the privatization and anti-union agenda of the Charest government in Quebec City. So, in 2007 and 2008, we spent about $1.3 million on this funding of these initiatives in those three provinces alone. Now, national strategic priorities, account for approximately $1.4 million every year over the past 2 years. A large part of this pays for implementation, for example, of our strategic directions policy, which was adopted at the last national convention in Toronto 2 years ago. So this is our work plan. This work plan will be developed over the next several days of our convention, and we're not going to just abstractly vote for something. We're going to put money, we'll put our money where our mouth is. This year was 1.4 mil. So, brothers and sisters, when Money in the Defense Fund is talking, it's talking to politicians. We were able to act in four major categories with financing, which is more transparent, better planning, better application, and the orientations and directions are decided by you, all of you, at our convention. And we'll do the same thing at this convention. So, when the Money in the Defense Fund is talking, as I said before, money talks. Well, when this money is talking, it's talking to who? It's talking to politicians, men and women, talking to employers. It talks to the public. It says invest in public service. It says invest in communities. It says invest in equality and in social justice here in Canada and around the world, everywhere in the world. And it's also saying that we must put a priority on activism.
And speaking of talking, because this I can say it in English, I don't know how you'd say this in French, but I'll ask our sisters and brothers. Speaking of talking, because money talks. So far, so good. Two reports, two funds, General Fund, Defense Fund. I'm getting to the Strike Fund, our third fund, National Strike Fund. Well, it did a lot of talking this past year. My convention report to you is accountability for the last 2 years. But I know everyone in this room wants to know the impact of the long and large strikes we have experienced so far this year. So you have in the books 07 and 08. You want to know 09, I'm sure. Well, simply put, our strike fund remains strong, standing at over $20 million as we're speaking today. $21 million, as a matter of fact. And this after supporting over 30,000 of our QP members just this year. But really, it's not 30,000. It's 48,000 members since our last convention. So in March, I need to express this in numbers, in March of this year, the strike fund was inching its way to $40 million for our very first time in our history. Some of us were almost getting inebriated by this. $40 million, we didn't even think this could happen in our lifetime. But then in June, it dipped to $35 million. And now it stands, as I just told you, at $21 million. So all of this is just to say that it's a cautionary tale for those who would like to see some of this money freed up for other uses, legitimately, but particularly in our current bargaining climate. The last 6 months tell us that it doesn't take long to drop by half. And again, it is money well spent. Money spent to support members who were striking, as I said, for me and for you. At the same time, we have built our national strike fund strong enough to withstand these cycles, which was the problem we had before when we first put it up. All of which speaks very loudly of our collective strength and our determination to say no to concessions. Yes, money talks. And it can change the world. And I mean the whole world. In addition to our three funds, I told you we had only three funds, but I realized there's really a fourth fund that I need to talk to you. A smaller fund. Should be bigger, but let me talk about this one. We have a fund supporting our work, a fund that the National Executive Board administers. It is our Global Justice Fund. Our Global Justice Fund supports workers around the world. Paul this morning introduced some of the workers who are working, who need that desperately that support. Like workers in Colombia and in Philippines and so many other places in the world who are fighting privatization. In those countries, it's a matter of life and death. Literally, I give you numbers as a treasurer. Usually it's dollar numbers. I'm going to give you a very sinister number. Did you hear the credential report this morning? Did you? Yeah? You heard what the number was, the number of people in attendance this morning, or delegates? Do you remember the number? I think it was 1,208. When Paul went to Colombia with other trade unionists, we learned that in 10 years, 1,200 activists, trade unionists, peasants died in 10 years. That's us. It's a very sinister number, but I have to give it to you. It's us. If we would have been in Colombia, we'd be dead. We'd have to find a new generation, altogether a whole new generation with no transition, nothing, to keep the work going. This is why this is so important. And right now, in Ontario and in Labrador, steel workers are on strike against Vale Inco. This employer is importing scabs to try to deny these workers here in Canada their power and importing lower labor standards. I'm not thinking about the scabs, the workers themselves in some ways, it's despicable. But I'm thinking about these standards that are being imported, trying to change this here in Canada. So pushing back has to happen here and around the world at the same time. This is why it is so useful to have this fund. And last year, to report about this fund, only 1% of QP locals donated to the Global Justice Fund. That represents 2,000 locals. And more than half of them are from east of here. East is behind me. East of Quebec. That's the Eastern Bloc, as we say affectionately in QP. The four eastern provinces. I want to thank you for this. Thank you. But we need to improve this. And I want to urge all QP locals to give our Global Justice Fund their support so that I can give different numbers or a new treasurer or whomever reports on this better numbers. Consoeurs et confrères, la force...
Sisters and brothers, the strength of our beliefs, the drive behind our activism, the desire to make a better and more just world comes from our hearts and from our souls. And we need a base, a strong base, to support us in this. A base that is consistent with all that we are trying to achieve. All that we can achieve. I think it is crucial to live our beliefs in a very concrete way. Beliefs such as preserving our environment. Over the past 2 years, we have made some progress at both lightening our impact on the environment and developing achievable goals for the future. We said that we wanted things that were possible. For example, we made changes to our automobile fleet beginning in 2008. We made sure that the choices provided to staff included a hybrid car to conserve energy and reduce our emissions. And this past year, we moved ahead with initiatives to reduce our impact by spending money on technology. It's good for us. And so that more of our organizational needs for meetings can be accomplished through teleconferences, for example, and we're doing more and more teleconferencing. For this convention, we hired a consultant, a QP member, to assist us in having a greening convention, Susan Badal. She's a QP member. She's an expert, but she's a member of QP. She's in 2626 at the University of Ottawa. Is she in here, Susan? Susan, are you here? Anyway, she really helped us to take this green turn for our convention. So as a result of this greening of the convention, there's less paper. The paper we're using is 100% recycled. Your convention bags are made of hemp. No dyes are used, and they're fully biodegradable. It's only Monday. Don't try to smoke. Don't try to smoke. Yeah, things are going to be bad if you try to smoke in this room. You know? Don't smoke in here. Okay. Don't try to burn these bags. It's hemp, but don't try to bag them. You know, Paul comes from Winnipeg, and he says, if this is biodegradable, can I put a hole in it? That'll help it to turn into tomatoes, help it to turn into fertilizer. Don't need to do that. It is biodegradable. So we also bought carbon credits for everybody who came here by train or by airplane. It's the beginning of our efforts, and we got to continue the fight. But at the same time, we're going forward. We're going forward in many, many ways. It's the same thing with our employment equity program. We're working with our staff unions in order to increase the equity representation among our staff. And all of this effort, all of this work represents our values as a progressive trade union, representing the diversity of our members and at the same time respecting the rights of staff in working together to meet our equity targets. We're not working alone. We recently conducted a new survey among the staff, and we're now working together to establish new short and long-term goals. Sisters and brothers, these measures strengthen our base just as significantly as building our balance sheet. And these figures are in my written report. I don't want to spend all day here at the mic with you because there are other things to do. So I'm going to cut short the various examples I wasn't going to give you. And we'll get back to finances. But we made a lot of significant moves in the general fund, the defense fund, the strike fund. These are our foundation, our basis.
It has been my priority to strengthen the foundation. We have embarked on an investment program so that we now have a second stream of revenue. That from earnings on investment. Strange to report this in a trade union convention. I had to tell you when I was first elected that we had to pay interests. This was the second stream of payments. So now I'm reporting a second stream of revenue instead. And I like reporting about this instead. And it is also, thanks, and it is also why we made significant moves towards funding our benefit obligation for staff. And of course, in accountability, the terminology is a liability. It's a liability issue, but it's really a benefit obligation, and we're happy to dispense our obligation. Of course, the recession has limited our investment income, and we have fallen slightly behind in our goal for meeting this unfunded liability, that benefit obligation. This issue, by the way, is identified in your National Trustee report that we'll hear later on this afternoon. But it is a problem we intend to address with the 2010 budget. It is also why we have embarked on a program of buying rather than leasing our office space. And in 2002, we continued to purchase rather than lease our office space. I'm proud to report that we now own many of our office buildings. So I may give a bit of numbers now that is dizzying, and I'm happy in a way that it could be dizzying. Those are the new homes I was saying that we have in QP for staff and activists in 8 provinces. I reported to you in 2005 that we had purchased 5 buildings. In 2007, I announced 3 more in addition to our national office. And in the last 2 years, we've embarked on 4 new building projects and purchased 3 more. So since 2002, when you add this up, we have entered, since 2002, we've entered as well into 5 lease-to-own arrangements in Quebec. So adding all up could almost quiz you. What is the number? Did someone come with a number? What did I hear? 6? You cannot count, Julie. I think it was Julie saying this. It's 21. Those 21 initiatives represent a lot more than our offices, though. They establish us very firmly in the community. And with the 4 previously owned offices we have today, we have a stock of 25 QP properties across Canada. So owning rather than renting. Saves us money, that's for sure. And more than this, they are our QPOMs. They also represent the capital assets, if I come back to this, assets we can take to the bank if it ever gets to the point where we need to borrow money. I was talking to you about the strike fund. Well, before we had no fallback position if worse would come to worse, and we don't know what's in store for us. So we have this. And if it gets to that point, well, we will be able to borrow money. But for now, we can sleep peacefully, knowing that we have $60 million in combined assets. A dozen years ago, we did not have a red cent, I think is the proper expression in English. On n'avait pas un sou rond en français, we say. We even owed money, as a matter of fact. So what the strength in our asset base means is that today, no QP member needs to worry about strike pay again. No QP member needs to worry about the ability of their union to fight back against privatization, of the ability of their union to fight for what? For social justice. And while we put money away in our national strike fund, in the national defense fund, for these purposes, the increasing financial strength in our operations means we also have increasing flexibility for our activism. So, full circle. Our investment is not just in capital assets. We have begun to truly invest in ourselves. As I have outlined over the past number of years, we have been gradually but substantially increasing the amount of money we spend in regions and on campaigns, activism, and political action. So in fact, when we combine all we have financially committed, our support to this activism, well, we've increased this support to close to $8 million, or more than four times what it used to be 7 years ago in 2001. So this, even though our membership has grown by 15%, or another way to look at this, our revenue has grown by 30% in the same period. We've quadrupled our support, and it shows our activism works. Right here in Quebec, in Belleuil, try to say this in French. You'll understand my plight when I speak in English. Belleuil, just south of Longueuil. Try this. In Belleuil, Joanne Gauthier, president of QP Local 4750, was suspended after speaking out against plans for a Petri project. And I don't know if sister is in the room, Lucy. I've not seen her. But quick work on QP got on the part of QP got sister Gauthier reinstated the next day. And now the Petri plans, if it be a rec center, I'd say they're on ice. And I'm happy this happened. A Petri plan as well. A Petri plan to rebuild a major highway interchange right here in Montreal, very close to us this way, has been ditched. Deep six, I would say, because the government says the savings are no longer possible. Well, you know what? The savings were never there. And if you get your hands on a Nuchu piece of work that was really great, I know when we say a piece of work, well, it's in the good sense. We had an economist that showed us how the economies were never there. And the Petri agency set up by the Charest government has disintegrated, spelling the end of Petri for a Petri hospital project in Quebec City. And I don't know if Mario Cloutier is in the house today. Well, I want to thank Mario and the local and the sector for the work there. And why is it happening? Well, because of UQP members and our coalition partners. You've been fighting back. So we do have a tough road ahead of us. Take a look at our proposed strategic direction paper. This week, we will debate it, improve upon it, and ultimately determine our plan of action for the next 2 years. So, we have moved out into the next 2 years. Paul and I have reported to you about the last 2 years, and we're slowly moving now, looking forward. And I know we can increase our political muscle. We can start to truly invest in ourselves. See, we're not just about bricks and mortar. But the bricks and mortar serve us as a very important symbol of who we are, how we, with our collective money, will ultimately feed our activist souls. I would like to thank, on this note, our National Executive Board for their support, the staff at National Office who support my work, your work, all of our work, and the staff across the country who support all of us, all QP charter organizations. I would particularly like to thank our National President, Paul Moyse, for his support, friendship, and advice over the last 2 years. Thank you, Paul. Thanks. And in concluding, I would like to take a moment. I think we've never taken that time. I confess I never did. I talked to you about the strength of our finances. This does not happen overnight. More than 20 years ago, two leaders that are sitting in this room now, they're not. Where's Jeff Rose? Where's Jean-Claude Laniel? For once in 22 years, I want to thank them, and they're not in the room. I hope you're close to a monitor and you hear this, the two brothers. They were our two leaders then in the late 80s. And there you are, Jean-Claude. Thank you. You know what they did? They pushed us. They led us into changing the financial base of QP, moving from flat base into a percentage base. And this was the sowing. It took long for the blossoming, more than 20 years, to get the right rate and get it together. It started gelling. But this was the initial sowing. And thank you, Jean-Claude. Thank you, Jeff. I truly mean it. I think credit due was never really said on the floor of a convention. And I want to, on this note, thank all of you. Thank you for your dedication to QP and for your hard work moving us forward day in, day out. And we say this sometimes, and you think it's a formula. Really, it's felt deep that this is happening every day. And I look forward for the next 2 years with vigor and with confidence as we meet these many challenges ahead. I'm going to close my remarks today, before today is tomorrow, with a graphic presentation of the strength of our foundation. A picture speaks 1,000 words, they say. So after some 4,000 words, here are, yikes, another 20,000 words. The QP homes across the country that each and every one of us owns. But I'll say it in a different way. I think we'll just say, roll the camera, please. Hey. Yep, money talks. So let's get down to work. Bon travail. Je propose adoption de mon rapport. Merci beaucoup.
I move adoption of my report. Thank you very much.
Claude moves adoption of his report. Can I have a seconder, please? It's seconded. I recognize the delegate at mic 3.
Yeah, hi. I'm Bob Craigs from Local 2380 Innisfil, and I've got a situation with a voting card. I don't know where it is, and I'm asking the general membership if I could have a voting card, please.
We're going to, brother, no problem. We're going to bring some voting cards at the front. They're not here right now, but I'll announce it, and you just go over to the side on the honor system.
Thank you very much.
Okay, no problem. On the treasurer's report, microphone 4.
Hi, Dane Gray, QP Local 4207 in St. Catharines, Ontario. Thank you very much for your report, Brother Genereux. I just wanted to talk about some things in the budget that I take particular issue with. So last year, our budget was roughly around $160 million. And based on this report in 2008, as a quote from the report, $1.58 million went to new organizing initiatives. That represents like less than 1% of our budget. Other unions in this country are spending between 25 to 50% of their budgets on organizing, like SEIU. And they're organizing members that really ought to be QP members, like PSWs in Ontario, etc. It also says here that our organizing efforts have been focused on organizing wall-to-wall in all our sectors and in long-term care. If that's the case, and if the national union is so committed to wall-to-wall organizing strategies, why did we lose our full-time organizer in the university sector in Ontario? I think that this union, in order to be a more dynamic social movement union in this environment that we're in, we need to spend a lot more of our resources on organizing. We only have 6 permanent staff members in the organizing and regional services department, or in organizing. It's in here. It's on page 32. Yes, 6 organizing and regional services, QP permanent staff complement. So I think when the resolutions come up, it's really important that we get to some of the resolutions on organizing and that the union makes a bigger commitment to organizing new members, using more resources, spending at least 10% of our annual resources on organizing would be fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you, brother. As we did last convention with Claude's report, we're going to take these interventions. He's taking notes. He'll answer all questions. Brother at mic 5.
Hurley, Regional Vice President for Ontario. Claude, thank you for your report, and also especially thank you for creating the Fight Back Fund in the operating fund of the National Union. The last convention ended on a bit of a sour note after a resolution that would have restored access to support for strikes against legislation which attacked collective agreements was defeated. And there was a lot of anger. I think everybody was angry with everybody. Certainly a lot of people were angry with Ontario, and we had our share of that too. And you made a very constructive solution to that problem, Claude. And I know that in the months and years ahead, as our provincial governments attack our bargaining regimes and attack public services as they try to eliminate deficits, that the wisdom of creating that National Fight Back Fund will become more and more evident. And I thank you for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you very much. Recognize the brother at mic 6.
Roland Cormier, local 13.
1303, Roland Cormier. My question is for Claude. I'm Roland Cormier from 1303. So this is for Claude. It's on page 54 of your report. You mention that we have about $21 million invested in a fund, but you're saying we hold shares in that fund. So how come do we have those shares? If the pension plan of the employees is okay, that's fine. But if it's money belonging to the union, how come is our money at risk? And if you look at the results, we've lost about 20% in that fund. So my question is, why are we investing in the stock market?
To that question, I see 7 speakers. When their questions are put, Brother Claude will answer all questions, and then we'll vote on his report. Mike 1.
Merci pour mes.
Well, thanks to the brothers and sisters from Montreal who are welcoming us. But I'm going to switch to English.
Toronto. You noted in your report, or as a piece of your report, a couple of times that money talks, and that's what I want to talk about. Money speaks louder than a number of other things we